tyrant's death. Was this planet the first stop on your wandering? The chief handler shrugged his bony shoulders. We have myths about that, but it was more than 1,000 years ago.
15 centuries, Thufir suggested.
He was a bright student. Considering his past and his place in history, the Mentok Gola was quite interested in spans of time.
Our race spread to many nearby worlds. We were not an empire, but a political brotherhood. Then out of nowhere, the honored Matres came like a stampede of blind and clumsy animals, as destructive in their ignorance as in their malevolence. Orakhtho bent his elongated face toward the brazier's glow. Orange light washed across his skin. Other handlers sat around the upper deck's circular wall, listening and muttering. Their distinctive body smells drifted into the cool air. Their race seemed to have an affinity for scents, as if smell was an important part of their communication abilities.
Without warning, they came to pillage, destroy, and conquer.
Orakhtho's face was as hard as petrified wood, his long jaw set.
Naturally, we had to stop this feral incursion.
His lips curved in a faint smile.
So we developed our futars.
But how did you do that? Shiana asked.
If these deceptively simple people could detect orbiting ships and create sophisticated genetic hybrids, their technology must be far more advanced than was evident.
Some of those who joined us in settling these worlds were orphans of the Tliloxu race. They showed us how to change our offspring to create what we needed, since God and evolution would be much too slow to provide them for us.
The Futars, Teg said,
they are most interesting. After their initial reunion, the handlers had taken the predatory creatures off to holding areas where they could be with others of their own kin. What happened to these Tliloxu? The rabbi looked around. He had never much liked Master Sytale.
Alas, they are all dead.
Killed? Teg asked.
Extinct. They don't breed the same as others do. He sniffed, as if disinterested in that part of the story.
Our Futars were bred to hunt honored Matres.
Those women came to our planets, confident they would conquer us.
But we turned the tables on them. They are fit to serve as food for our Futars. Nothing more.
For safety, Teg suggested that their group sleep in the lighter with the hatches sealed and defensive fields up, which obviously displeased their hosts. The chief handler cast a glance over his shoulder. Though these forests are well tamed, a few of the old predators still roam the grounds at night.
It would be better if you stayed with us, up here in the safe towers.
A flicker of dismay crossed the rabbi's face. What old predators? He didn't want to hear about any flaws with this world.
The feline beasts that supplied genetic material for creating the Futars.
Orakhtho gestured with his loose arms across to another cylindrical wooden tower.
We have a grand show tomorrow.
You should be well rested for what you will witness.
What kind of show?
Hawat sounded eager. At times he seemed no more than the boy he truly was, rather than a potential warrior mentat. With a mysterious smile, the chief handler motioned for them to follow him. His green irises now looked like blazing emeralds. It was full dark outside. Unfamiliar constellations sparkled like a million eyes reflecting firelight.
He guided the four visitors across a sturdy plank walkway to a nearby tower, then down a spiraling interior staircase that circled the cylinder twice before reaching the ground level. They walked across the leaf-strewn forest floor to a much shorter tower that looked like a thick, man-made stump. The stench struck them first. The base of the stout artificial tree had been hollowed out like a dank lair. Thick vertical bars extended deep into the mulchy ground, blocking off the hollow to form a dirt-floored cell. Teg raised his eyebrows.
You have prisoners.
The chamber contained five ragged, angry captives. Despite their tattered and beaten appearance, Shiana could tell they were human. All were females with matted hair, rough hands, and bloodied knuckles. The remnants of torn leotards clung to their pale skin, and their eyes flashed faintly orange.
Honored Matres.
One of the whores saw them approach. Snarling, she lunged toward the wooden bars of her cage, flying sideways to deliver a devastating kick. Her bare foot slammed into the iron-hard wood. The impact produced a faint but hollow crack, and as the honored Matre limped away, Shiana realized the crack had been the fracture of bone, not wood. The women had already battered themselves bloody against the barricade. Orak Tho's face constricted as if a thunderstorm were brewing behind it.
Honored Matres came down in a transport ship 3 months ago, expecting easy prey. We massacred them, but managed to save some for training purposes.
His lips curled back.
It is not the first time they have tried to harass us. They form isolated cells that don't necessarily know what the others are doing. Thus, they repeat the same mistakes.
Two futars prowled around the base of the wooden tower, circling and sniffing. Shiana recognized one of them as Herm. The second beast man had a black stripe in the wiry hair of its chest. One of the captive honored Matres called out in a threatening voice,
"Free us, or our sisters will peel strips of meat from your bones while you still live."
Herm snarled and hurled himself at the cage, backing off only at the last moment. Hot spittle from his mouth splattered the captive honored Matre. Three of the beaten women came forward to the bars, looking as bestial as the futars.
As I said, Orak Tho continued in his calm and confident voice, honored Matres are fit for little more than food.
A handler came with a wooden bowl of red bones to which clung scraps of meat and fatty skin with patches of fur. A second bowl held slick-looking entrails and purplish organs. He dumped the offal through a slot into the cage. The filthy honored Matres looked at it in disgust.
Eat, if you wish to have strength for tomorrow's hunt.
We don't eat garbage, said one of the honored Matres.
Then you starve. It matters not to me.
Shiana could tell the women were ravenous. After a shaky hesitation, they grabbed for the scraps, tearing off raw pieces and eating until their faces and fingers were smeared with grease and covered with old blood. They looked through the bars at their captors with such hateful expressions that they seemed capable of putrefying flesh. One of the women glowered at Shiana.
You don't belong here.
Neither do you.
However, I am outside the cage while you are behind the bars.
The woman slammed the palm of her hand against the wooden barricade with a loud crack, but it was a half-hearted attempt at an attack. Herm pounced beside Shiana as if to protect her, then prowled in front of the cage, his muscles rippling. He seemed very agitated. Shiana found it ironic, knowing what the honored Matres had done to Herm and to his companions. The sexual perversions, the whippings and deprivations. It seemed a strikingly odd turnabout to see the women imprisoned with the Futars prowling free. She turned to the chief handler. Honored Matres abuse their captive Futars. Your punishments are appropriate.
My guests, tomorrow we will put you in our best observation stations, from which you can watch the hunt. Orakthō reached over to pat both Futars on their heads. It will be good for this one to run with his brothers and get in practice again. It is what he was born to do.
With his bestial eyes fixed on the honored Matres, Herm curled back his lips and bared his teeth in a menacing smile. Before they all slept, Teg returned to the lighter to transmit an optimistic report back to the Ithaca.
An alliance is often more a work of art than a simple business transaction. Mother Superior Darwy O'Draid, Private Records, Bene Gesserit Archives.
The Guild Navigator finally came to Chapter House in response to the Mother Commander's summons. Though she was impatient and frustrated with him, he did not explain where he had been or why he had delayed coming for several days. In the meantime, Janess, Kyria, and 10 other hand-picked Valkyries, most of them from the original Honored Matres who had undergone Bene Gesserit training, had already been secretly deposited on Tlilox to begin their underground work. They would be infiltrating the last stronghold of the rebel whores to undermine their defenses, planting the seeds of destruction while setting up for a surprise ambush. A part of Mirbella wished she could be with her daughter's team, wearing traditional honored Matre clothing again, letting the predator half of her dual nature come to the fore. But she trusted Janess and her companions. For now, Mirbella had to arrange the rest of the details and secure guild cooperation, either through bribery or threat. She had to be the Mother Commander, not just an average fighter. The mutated navigator swam in his tank, not looking at all eager or interested, which troubled the Mother Commander. She had hinted that he would be rewarded well for speaking with her, but he did not seem excited by the prospect.
The gas looks thin in your tank, Navigator, she said. It is only a temporary shortage.
He did not seem to be bluffing.
We may be ready to increase your supply of melange if the Guild is ready to cooperate with us and participate in the fight against the oncoming enemy.
Edric's metallic voice came through the speakers of his tank.
Your offer comes much too late, Mother Commander. For years you have tried to frighten us with the existence of this shadow enemy, and you have tantalized us with promises of melange. But your treasure has lost its luster. We have been forced to seek other alternatives, other supply lines.
There are no other sources of melange. Mirbella glided forward to stand close to the curved plaz and peer inside.
The Spacing Guild is in crisis. The severe shortage of spice, perpetuated by your sisterhood, has split us into two factions. Many navigators have already died from withdrawal, while others do not have sufficient melange to perceive safe paths through fold space. One faction of the guild, led by human administrators, has clandestinely hired the Ixians to develop improved navigation machines. They intend to install them in all guild ships. Machines. Ix has been talking about such things for centuries.
People in the scattering used navigational devices, and so did Chapter House. They have never been fully acceptable before.
And after years of intensive research, it seems they may have a viable solution to the ancient, impossible problem. I believe they are inferior substitutes, not at all comparable to navigators. And still, they work.
The Mother Commander's mind raced ahead, chasing several desirable possibilities she had not previously considered. If the Ixians had developed reliable devices for guiding ships through fold space, then the new Sisterhood could use them in its own fleet. No longer needing to force the cooperation of the navigators, they could be independent, not at the mercy of a volatile and unpredictable power base such as the Guild.
If indeed Ix would sell such devices to the Sisterhood, surely the Guild must have some sort of exclusive contract. Then she realized that even the short-term solution of using navigation machines for her own battle fleet had its drawbacks. Second and third order consequences. Only Chapter House had spice. With that single substance, they could pay and control the navigators so that no other party could compete. If melange became unnecessary, then the whole worth and strength of the new Sisterhood would diminish. Only a moment had passed as Mirbella had considered all of this. Navigation machines would mean the end of navigators such as yourself. And it would also remove one of the primary customers for your melange, Mother Commander. Therefore, my faction seeks a reliable and secure source of spice, so that navigators can continue to exist. Your new Sisterhood has driven us to this extreme. We cannot depend on you for the spice we need.
And you have discovered another supplier of melange? She let a scoffing tone into her voice. I find that doubtful. We would know about it.
We have a high level of confidence in our alternative.
Edric drifted away, came back. Mirbella shrugged nonchalantly.
I offer you an immediate increase in spice.
With a gesture, she directed three of her assistants to move a small suspensor barrow into the room. It was heaped high with packages of spice, as much as one navigator could use in the better part of a standard year. The tank's speakers remained silent, but she could see the hunger in Edric's strange eyes. Mirbella feared for a moment that he would turn her down, and all of her carefully thought-out tactics would come to naught.
One can never possess too much spice, the navigator said after an interminable pause. We have learned the painful lesson of relying on any single source. It would be better for the navigators and for the new Sisterhood if we could reach some sort of accommodation.
I was right, she thought.
You need our spice, and we need your ships. The Guild will listen to your proposal, Mother Commander, provided it is a discussion rather than a threat. A business proposal between respected partners, not the sting of a bully's lash.
She stared at the tank, surprised by his bold statement.
He might really have another source of spice, or at least the possibility of one.
But he seems to harbor doubts and wants to play it safe. I need two Guild ships for transport to Tleelox. One equipped with a no-field and the other a traditional highliner.
For what purpose?
We will grind down the only remaining stronghold and eliminate the last viable threat of the honored Matres, once and for all. It will be arranged within 2 days. I will take the spice now.
Renegade honored Matres, the mysterious enemy, face dancers. Mirbella could not run from them all, but the process of physical exercise, running, sweating, and straining, helped her to think as she planned her final assault on Tlelox. Dressed in a clinging single suit, she sprinted along a stony path toward a hill near the keep. She pushed herself until each breath slashed her lungs like a razor. Some of the inner voices scolded her for wasting time when there was so much work to be done. Mirbella only ran harder. She wanted to stimulate and provoke those other memories, needed them alert. The clamorous sea of past lives was always there, but not always available, and certainly not always helpful. Making sense out of the collective wisdom was a constant challenge, even for the most influential of sisters. Upon passing through the spice agony, a new Reverend Mother was like a baby thrown into a vast ocean and commanded to swim through the waves of other memory to survive. With so many sisters inside, she could always ask questions, but she also risked getting sucked down into the whirlpool of churning advice. Other memory was a tool. It could be a great boon or a great peril. Sisters who delved too deeply into this reservoir of the past were in danger of going insane. That had been the fate of the Kwisatz mother, Lady Anarul Kurino, so long ago during the time of Muad'Dib. It was like reaching for a sword and grabbing the blade instead of the hilt. A matter of balance. The floating souls viewed Mirbella's mind from the inside, and some thought they knew her better than she knew herself. But even though she could see the past sisters of the Bene Gesserit, her honored Matre ancestry remained blocked from her by a black wall. As a little girl, Mirbella had been captured in one of the honored Matre sweeps, taken from her family and trained in cruelty and sexual domination. A whore. Yes, the Bene Gesserit name was appropriate. Those terrible women from the scattering had their dark secrets, their shame, their ignominious crimes. Somewhere in the past, they knew their origin, knew what they had done to provoke the enemy. If only she could find that information inside herself, she would know the truth about the vicious women she was about to face. Reaching the rustling grasses and flat brown rocks on the hill, she climbed to the boulder-strewn crest and sat on the highest point of rock. From this vantage, she could see Chapter House Keep to the east and the encroaching dunes to the west. Her heart pounded from the exertion, and perspiration trickled down her forehead and cheeks. Her body had been pushed to a physical edge, and now it was time to do the same with her mind. She had accomplished much as Mother Commander. Mirbella had managed to keep the two poles of the new sisterhood from tearing each other apart, but the scars still ran deep. She had crushed or consolidated all but one of the enclaves of renegade honored Matres. She needed to know more, needed to understand the face dancers that had infiltrated the old empire, the enemy, and the honored Matres. I must have that information before we depart for Tlelox. Mirbella opened a small pack at her waist and removed 3 wafers of fresh, concentrated melange shipped up from the deep desert. She held the brownish-red wafers in her hand, feeling the spice tingle slightly as it mixed with the perspiration of her palm. She consumed all 3 wafers, intending to use the spice as a mental battering ram. I will go deep this time, she thought. Guide me, my sisters, and bring me back out, for I have important information to discover.
the spice began to work within her. Closing her eyes, she dove inward, following the taste of melange. She could see the sweeping landscape of Bene Gesserit memories extending to an infinite horizon of human history. She seemed to be running down a kaleidoscopic corridor of mirrors, mother to mother to mother. Fear threatened to overwhelm her, but the sisters within parted and drew her into their midst, absorbing her consciousness. But Mirbella demanded to know about the other half of her existence, to discover what lay behind the black wall that blocked all honored Matre paths. Yes, the memories were there, but muddled and disorganized, and they seemed to reach a dead end after only a handful of centuries, as if she had sprung from nowhere. Were the horrors descended from lost and corrupted reverend mothers, isolated out in the scattering, as had been postulated? Had they formed their society with surviving fish speakers from the God Emperor's private guard, creating a bureaucracy based on violence and sexual domination? Honored Matres rarely looked to the past, except when they glanced fearfully over their shoulders as the enemy pursued them. The spice washed through Mirbella, sending her still deeper into her crowded thoughts, slamming her up against the obsidian barrier. In a trance atop the dry, rocky hill, Mirbella backed through generation after generation. Her breathing constricted, her external vision blurred into blindness. She heard a whimper of pain pass her lips. Then, like a traveler emerging from a narrow defile, she beheld a mental clearing in which shadowy ghost women helped her forward. They showed her where to look. A crack in the wall, a way through. Deeper shadows, cold. And then, I see. The answer made her reel. Yes. During the famine times, a splinter group of rogue Bene Gesserits, a few untrained, wild reverend mothers, and fugitive fish speakers had indeed escaped in the turmoil after the tyrant's death. Yet that was only a small part of the answer. In their flight, those women had also encountered isolated and insular Tliloxu worlds. For more than 10,000 years, the fanatical Bene Tliloxes had used their females only as breeding machines and axolotl tanks. In a closely guarded secret, they kept their women immobilized, comatose, and uneducated, no more than wombs on tables. No Bene Gesserit, no outsider, had ever seen a Tliloxu female. When those rogue Bene Gesserits and militant fish speakers discovered the horrific truth, their reaction was swift and unforgiving. They left not a single Tliloxu male alive on those outlying worlds. Liberating the breeding tanks, they took the Tliloxu females with them on their journey, tending them, trying to bring them back. A great many of the mindless tanks died, for no medical reason other than that they were unwilling to live. But some Tliloxu females recovered. When they grew strong, they vowed reprisal for the monstrous crimes the males had committed for 1,000 generations. And they never forgot. The core of the honored Matres were vengeful Tliloxu females. The renegade reverend mothers, militaristic fish speakers, and recovered Tliloxu females had united to form the honored Matres. Lost out in the scattering for more than 12 centuries, they had no access to melange, could no longer undergo the spice agony, and were unable to find an alternative that would allow them access to other memories. Over time, interbreeding with males from populations they encountered, then dominated on other worlds, those women had become something else entirely.
And now Mirbella knew why her chain of predecessors ended in dark emptiness. She traveled back, generation to generation, all the way to a Tliloxu female who had been a comatose breeding tank, a mindless womb. Gathering her courage and focusing her rage, Mirbella pushed harder and became the paralyzed tank that Tliloxu female had once been. She shuddered as the dim and helpless sensations and memories seeped into her. She had been that young girl raised in captivity, understanding little of the world beyond her pitiful confinement, unable to read, barely able to speak. In the month of her first menstruation, she had been dragged away, strapped to a table, and turned into a flesh vat. No longer conscious, the nameless woman had no idea how many offspring her body had produced. Then she had been awakened and liberated. The Mother Commander understood what it meant to be that Tliloxu female and others, and why the honored Matres became so ferocious. No longer the degraded, despised mothers of Tliloxu males, they demanded to be revered, to be known from that time forth as honored Matres. Honored mothers. And through her Bene Gesserit eyes, Mirbella recognized their humanity after all. With understanding came release, and then everything else along the honored Matre line came to her in a flood. She awoke and found herself sitting on the rock again, but no longer in sunlight. Hours had passed as she journeyed through her other lives. Now a dry night wind chilled her. Shuddering from the after effects of the melange and her devastating journey, Mirbella lurched to her feet. She finally had her answers, would share this crucial information with her advisors. Hearing distant shouts, she looked back toward the keep. Lights were fanning out from the fortress as searchers came looking for her. She had been a searcher too, and now she needed to tell the rest of the new sisterhood what she had found. The Valkyries would be preparing their assault on Tlilox.
A choice can be as dangerous as a weapon. Refusing to choose is in itself a choice. Pertain, ancient Mentat philosopher. Though nearly 200 people remained aboard, the Ithaca felt empty to Duncan. The lighter had landed safely on the new planet, bearing Shiana, Teg, the old rabbi, and Thufir Hawat. Recovery teams had discreetly collected water and air, then returned to the no-ship. Everything was calm, on schedule. The Bashar's recent message had indicated no sign of threat from the handlers, and Duncan took the opportunity to leave the navigation bridge. Now that he had thought of it, he couldn't get the idea out of his head. He felt like a prowler, sneaking off to do something forbidden as he stood alone before the sealed null entropy chamber. He hadn't touched it in years, hadn't even thought about those perfectly preserved items it contained. He moved quietly, making certain the corridors were empty. Though Duncan assured himself he was doing nothing wrong, he did not want to have to explain himself to anyone. He had fooled himself and many of the people aboard. But still, he was not free of the addictive, debilitating hold Mirbella had over him. He doubted she even realized the strength of the painful bond. When they had been together, when he had been able to get as much of her as he wanted, Duncan had never felt the weakness. But in all those years since. The corridor's glow panels were bright. The breathy white noise of air recirculation systems was the only sound Duncan could hear except for the pounding of his own heart. Before he could think too much,
Forsaking his Mentat ability to project possible consequences, he applied his thumbprint ID and deactivated the null entropy field. The storage locker opened with a faint exhalation of adjusting atmospheric pressures. And with it came Mirbella's smell, like a slap across his face, as if she were here, in front of him. Even after 19 years, her scent was as fresh as if he had just held her. Her garments and other personal articles carried that unmistakable fragrance that was so essentially her. He pulled out the items one by one, a loose tunic, a soft towel, the pair of comfortable leggings she often wore when they engaged in combat practice in the training room. He touched each one with a nervous caution, as if afraid he might find hidden knives there. Duncan had gathered these items and hidden them in storage very soon after escaping from Chapter House. He had not wanted to see traces of Mirbella in his personal quarters or in the training rooms. He had sealed them away because he couldn't bear to destroy them. Even then, he had realized the chains she had on him. Now, he looked at the collar of a rumpled tunic and, as he had hoped, saw a few loose strands of dark amber hair, like fine wires spun from precious metal, and at the end of each strand, the pale root. He hoped he had stored these items in time so many years ago. Viable cells. Duncan realized he wasn't breathing. He looked at the strands of loose hair and let his eyes fall closed, intentionally blocking the automatic Mentat trance. The idea was an impossible temptation to him. It had been years since another Gola baby had been created, though the axolotl tanks remained functional. Shiana's disturbing vision dream had forced her to call a halt to the project. Nevertheless, they had the capability of growing any Gola they wished. The tanks weren't being used right now. He had every right to consider this, after all he'd done for the people aboard the Ithaca. He picked up one of Mirbella's loose tunics, brought it to his nose, and inhaled a long breath. What did he really want? Duncan had distracted himself with enough duties and problems that her ghost image had faded back into his subconscious. He had thought he was over her, but his obsessive thinking about Mirbella had nearly made him lose the ship to the old man and woman several years ago, and only Teg's quick instincts had saved them. If I hadn't been distracted, preoccupied, obsessed. His mistake had almost cost them their freedom. Mirbella was dangerous. He had to let her go. Duncan would not allow his weakness to endanger them again. But when he'd remembered these items in null entropy storage, when the idea occurred to him that it was possible to have another Mirbella, it was like touching a hot flame to dry tinder. If he could gather the courage and ignore his own rational reservations, he could talk to the Tleilaxu master about the process before Shiana and the others returned from the planet of the Handlers. He rationalized it to himself, pretending there would be no harm in simply raising the idea to Cytale. It implied no decision on his part. He threw the articles back into the storage bin. Doing so seemed like swimming upstream against a strong current. The idea had latched itself firmly onto his mind. He slammed the cubicle door shut and sealed it again. For now. The only thing I like better than the smell of spice is the smell of fresh blood. Former Honored Matre Doria, Records of Early Training Sessions.
The hunt began at dawn. The tall, raccoon-faced men used stunner goads to roust the five captive honored matres from their stinking cell beneath the wooden tower. Herm and the black-striped futar prowled about. Six younger futars whined and growled anxiously. With glimmering orange eyes, the women had noticed the Ithaca's lighter on the far side of the clearing. Now, two of the honored matres burst impulsively out of the noisome cell, delivering swift kicks and blows, knocking aside the stunner goads. But the handlers and futars were well practiced in fending off any resistance. Before the whores could run, the black-striped futar pounced, driving one of them to the ground. He bared his long teeth at her throat, barely restraining himself from ripping out her larynx and ending the anticipated hunt too soon. She thrashed wildly, but the futar dug claws into her shoulder, pinning her with his strength and weight. Herm had trapped the second woman, circling her, his muscles coiled. A hungry growl bubbled in his throat. The younger futars paced nearby, wanting part of the kill. Not yet. The chief handler allowed a calm smile to flow across his long, streamlined face. Herm and Blackstripe froze. The younger ones howled. Miles Tegg had no great love for the honored matres, knowing the havoc they had wrought among the Bene Gesserit and how they had tortured him. They had already killed him once when they devastated Rakkus. But as a military commander, the Bashar viewed them as opponents against whom he should carry no undue malice. Young Thufir Hawat, sensing the Bashar's intense concentration, imitated him, gathering data as the basis for making further decisions. The old rabbi looked squeamish at the very thought of the hunt, even though honored matres had hunted his people too, on Gamu. Shiana stood by silently, accepting the violence that was sure to take place. She was quite intrigued. "We will kill you," snarled the honored matre, whom Herm held at bay. She crouched, holding her hands out as weapons, ready to spring. Herm was not intimidated by her. The six young futars snapped and snarled, eager for their own hunt. Their primal hunger went beyond the desire for mere food. The other three whores emerged from the tree stump cell. Although they were wary and ready to fight, they decided to wait for a better chance. "We will kill you," repeated the first trapped honored matre. "You will have the opportunity to try." Orak Tho stood straight, the dark band across his eyes falling into shadow. "Take them into the forest where they can run."
"Why not just execute us here?"
"Because we would not enjoy that as much." Several of the handlers smiled. They were calm and confident in their superiority. As she watched, Shiana tried to formulate a conjecture about these mysterious, isolated people, where they had come from and what their true goals might be. She took a step toward the nearest honored matre.
"Tell us your names, so that I might make a body record when this day is done."
The whore that was still pinned under the black-striped futar thrashed and yowled. The calmer honored matre merely fixed Shiana with a frozen gaze. Orak Tho raised his hand lightly, cutting off any further shows of bravado. "Your name will be forgotten by the time your flesh passes through the digestive systems of these futars. You will end your physical existence as excrement on the forest floor." The chief handler turned his back and strode away with his long-legged, loose-jointed gait. The ravenous futars closed in to prevent the women from making another escape attempt, herding them along. "Come, out into the forest."
Orak-Tho glanced back at the seething, honored Matres. Out there, you will have your chance to shed blood, or die in the attempt. Atop a tall, open-framed lookout tower constructed of smooth, silvery blonde wood, Teg stood on the open platform, grasped a railing, and looked down into the forest. Shiana was with him. Handlers guarded the base of the tower, their stun goads ready in case the hunted, honored Matres should come at them like an unexpected ricochet in their flight from the prowling futars. The guards did not look worried, though they kept Teg and Shiana safe, high above the killing grounds. The chief handler's guests were allowed to observe from this vantage point, supposedly the best view of the action. Because the range of the hunt itself was unpredictable, the rabbi and young Thufir Hawat had been sent to a different lookout tower a kilometer away. The old man had made weak protestations, claiming he would rather wait back at the lighter, but the handlers insisted that they observe the show. "This will prove we are not your enemies," Orak-Tho had said. "Witness what we do to honored Matres. Certainly you wish to see them suffer, considering the pain they have caused you too." "I would like to observe the hunt and witness your futars in action," Thufir had said, then glanced meaningfully at Teg. "It is important to see how these women fight, isn't it, Bashar? That way we can prepare, should we run into more of them." After the four observers were situated in the separate lookout towers, loud, vibrating horns blew through the forest. Shiana and Teg looked down into the maze of enormously tall aspens. The handler guards at the base of the tower sent out another signal. Somewhere out of sight, the five honored Matres split up and dashed into the underbrush, scattering dry leaves. To Teg, it was obvious the handlers and futars had done this many times before. Beneath them, two muscular beastmen bounded along between the aspen trunks, intent on tracking down their quarry. Teg could almost sense the bloodlust from there. The honored Matres would put up a good fight, but the whores had no real chance. Quickly, the hunting futars vanished into the labyrinth of trees. He and Shiana continued to watch. The great forest that extended out from the tower settlement was an endless maze of autumn gold and silvery bark. Traditional aspen groves were genetically identical, branching off from the same tree as runners rather than being deposited as fertilized seeds. Nature's clones. The tall trunks were surrounded by fallen yellow leaves, like antique solari coins scattered on the ground. From this perspective, the endless, straight and rigid trunks looked like the bars of a giant cage. Slipping into intense mentat awareness as he waited for the hunt to come closer, Teg analyzed the forest, fitting all the tiny pieces together until he resolved an unexpected pattern cleverly hidden among randomness. At one time, all of the great gray-trunked trees had been laid out in a precise order, carefully staged to present an appearance of geometrical naturalness. He studied further. There could be no mistaking it. This forest was artificially cultivated. Shiana looked at him. "A mentat projection." He responded with the barest nod, concerned that listening devices might have been planted in the observation tower. He did not like being separated from Thufir and the rabbi. Had this hunt been staged to break their party in half so the handlers could spy on their private conversations? He made a second-order projection. Obviously, although the original planters of this sweeping forest had strived to create the appearance of wildness, they had not been able to get past their innate sense of order. Had original colonists from the scattering cultivated this forest in barren ground generations ago? Or had the true natural chaos been so disturbing to them that they razed the existing trees to the ground and designed a new wilderness according to an acceptable blueprint? From far off came sounds of crashing through the trees, snarling futars, and female shouts. Abruptly, the disturbance moved toward the observation tower. Shiana leaned closer to the Bashar, masking her movement with a show of peering down at the hunt below. She spoke in a low whisper, "You have concerns, Miles?" They had just sent a signal to Duncan that everything was safe and under control. "I have thoughts. This hunt is an example. For instance, we know the handlers bred their futars for the specific purpose of killing honored matres. Considering how dangerous the horrors are, it seems a perfectly reasonable thing for the handlers to create and imprint such predators to protect themselves," Shiana said. "The chief handler's arguments make sense. There's no mistaking that we share a common enemy in the honored matres. Ask yourself who else might wish the honored matres to be destroyed, and the alliances become less clear-cut," Teg continued. "Simply because we both hate the honored matres does not guarantee that the handlers have the same goals as we do." Third order projection. If the handlers had learned their specialized genetic knowledge and sophisticated techniques from the Tleiloxu who fled in the scattering, then what part did the Beni Tleilox play in this overall conflict? Where did their allegiance lie? He would have to speak frankly with Master Sytale as soon as they returned to the Ithaca. Obviously, the last old master harbored much resentment toward the lost Tleiloxu who had betrayed his people. Those Tleiloxu stepbrothers had been changed out in the scattering. Maybe Sytale knew more than he had yet revealed. His Mentat awareness raced along. He felt his heart pounding, his metabolism speeding up. "We are not the only ones who hate the whores. The honored matres had somehow enraged the outside enemy enough to draw them toward the old empire." Teg gripped the wooden rail more tightly. Sensing his tension, Shiana gave him a questioning look, but with the faintest shake of his head, he warned her not to speak openly. He tried to think of a way to alert Duncan. Shiana grabbed his arm. "Look down there." One of the five honored matres charged through the aspen forest, dodging and weaving around the trunks. Behind her, three futars surged after their prey, their wiry hair erect and claws extended. The woman ran like the wind, her sinewy muscles and bare feet carrying her through the underbrush as she kicked up leaves like golden clouds of dust. At the base of the observation tower, two of the bandit-faced watchers held out their stun goads, but did not interfere. They would let the futars do the killing. Though she raced headlong, the honored matre could not outrun the beastmen. Her hair was disheveled, her eyes wide, her jaw set with determination, as if she was ready to turn and use her own teeth to rip out her pursuers' throats. With several swift bounds, the young futars closed on her, hungry and boisterous. Teg wondered if they had yet been blooded, or if this was their first hunt. Smelling the hot breath behind her, knowing the futars were within steps of bringing her down, the honored matre leapt into the air, struck the nearest smooth aspen trunk with her bare feet, and rebounded sideways. The nearest futar tried to turn so swiftly he scuffed up a spray of dirt and twigs. The woman landed on the ground, then sprang in the opposite direction, arms extended, teeth bared. She crashed into the second oncoming futar, and the force of her impact was enough to knock the beast man off balance. She rolled with him, used two fingers like bony spikes to jab out his feral eyes. The creature yowled and thrashed. In a move like liquid lightning, the woman grabbed its muzzle and with a vicious twist snapped the futar's neck. Without a moment's pause, barely even panting, she lunged toward the third young futar, her bloody fingers outstretched. Before the honored Matre could strike, though, the futar let out a brutal, shivering shriek, louder and more terrible than anything Teg had ever heard. The effect of the shriek, no doubt exactly as the futar and his trainers had intended, was to make the woman freeze. She stumbled as if her muscles had locked involuntarily. An animal version of voice? Before the honored Matre could recover, the first futar struck her down from behind and rolled her onto her back. With a slash of his claws, he tore long, bloody gouges across her face. With his other hand, he dug into her abdomen, ripping through her hardened muscles and reaching in up to his elbow to extract her heart. The woman twitched in a pool of blood, then lay still. The other futar sniffed at the body of his dead companion and went over to join the first one as they began to feed on the prey. Teg watched with fascinated disgust. The handler guards picked up the body of the slain futar. The remaining two beastmen paid them no attention as they slashed and tore, wetly devouring the stringy flesh of their victim. Farther off, from the direction of the tower where Thufir and the rabbi observed, came the sounds of more horns, more snarling and thrashing. The hunt continued. To suspect your own mortality is to know the beginning of terror. To learn irrefutably that you are mortal is to know the end of terror. Bene Gesserit Archives, Training Manual for Acolytes. Even as her undefeated Valkyries traveled toward Tlilox, the Mother Commander felt uneasy. Tlilox. The Tliloxu females. The honored Matres. So much now made sense to Mirbella. The whore's mindless destruction of all Tliloxu worlds was no longer entirely incomprehensible. But understanding did not lead to mercy. The new sisterhood's plans would not change. Much hung in the balance here, the culmination of an energy-draining conflict that diverted attention from preparing for the main struggle. The thwarted attack on Chapter House, the obliteration of Richesi, the insurgents and face dancers on Gamu. After today, this part would all be over. The immense highliner carried Mirbella's troops and equipment to the last stronghold of the rebel whores. After the guild ship disgorged her obvious fleet of Valkyries in the same warships she had used to attack both Boozle and Gamu, the show of force would certainly be impressive. From what she knew of Matre Superior Helica, however, Mirbella doubted simple intimidation would be enough. The Valkyries were willing to expend as much violence as might be necessary. In fact, they looked forward to it. Navigator Edric insisted on guiding the Highliner himself. Citing the Spacing Guild's long-standing neutrality, he would not participate in the actual combat, but he clearly wanted to be present during the takeover of Bandalong. Mirbella got the sense that the Navigator faction had something to gain here. Was the Guild hiding something on Tlilox? Though the navigators and human administrators had vehemently denied any involvement, some ship had delivered Helica's obliterators to Richesi. She had assumed it was an honored Matre vessel, but it could have been a guild ship. Like this one. In a transparent chamber above them, the navigator swam in fresh spice gas supplied by the Chapter House stockpiles. She didn't trust him. Earlier in the week, an innocuous-seeming guild supply vessel had sent a coded transmission containing the new sisterhood's specific plans to Jeunesse, hiding among the honored Matres. Her team's camouflage was secure, and the intelligence data Jeunesse provided in return had given Mirbella much to consider, a wealth of information that allowed her to plan a perfect coup de grace. Along with Kyria and the other 10 faux honored Matres, Jeunesse had made preparations to strike the soft white underbelly of the overconfident whores while they stared up at the skies. Soon. Emerging from fold space, the giant vessel went into orbit over Tleelox. Bashar Wiki Aztin already had her orders. From the navigator's bridge, Mirbella looked down at the planet. The continents still showed great black scars from the original violent takeover by the honored Matres. The women had unleashed terrible weapons, but stopped short of completely sterilizing the main Tleloxu world, choosing to crush and conquer the remnants instead of wiping them out. Unconscious revenge on behalf of countless generations of Tleloxu females. No doubt Matre Superior Helica did not know her own history, but she knew her hatred well. In the subsequent decades since the original attack, the draconian women had salvaged what seemed unsalvageable. Now, as Mirbella studied the terrain below, her tactical advisors matched details with the intelligence reports Jeunesse and her spies had sent. Though incommunicado, Bashar Aztin would be making a last broad assessment, formulating and finalizing plans for the main, unexpected strike. The whores down there must certainly have noted the Highliner's unscheduled arrival. Mirbella gave her signal, and more than 60 of the attack ships from Chapter House